Before we begin this episode, I want to give a huge shout out to all of my patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfems, especially the folks on our BBF, BFF tier, and that's Cristian Galindo, Evelyn Preciado, and Cassandra Tapia. Y'all are freaking rock stars. If you also want to support the continued creation of this podcast, go to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. The link is in the description, and you get video versions of the episodes and other goodies. So check it out. All right. We're doing it live. I am one of your hosts, Ruben, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. And with me today is a longtime friend of the pod. You might even say he's another BBF, BFF, Daniel Alvarenga.
Hey.
And where are you coming from today?
I'm coming from Washington, D.C.
Washington,
The
D.C. And what is.
literal belly of the beast.
Yeah, it's like the lower intestine of the beast at that point.
Ew, yeah. Actually, there's all this poop in the Potomac, so yes.
Shut the fuck up. Did you put it
Yes, yeah,
there?
the it's it got really, I don't know, something like it got poisoned with all this. Someone's septic tank fell in there. I don't know, like it's just sewage right now.
Shut the
I don't
fuck
know
up.
what kind of government mismanagement happened, but
That reminds me of the, was it the Dave Matthews Band, like Chicago Bridge incident of the 90s? Do you remember that?
no.
Oh, where their tour bus like released like their restroom shit onto like a
Yes.
boat taking a ride under the some bridge in Chicago.
Yes. So someone did something like that to the Potomac, which is the river that runs through Washington, D.C. You know, George Washington sailed on it. And it is the dirtiest river in America right now, and
Damn.
it's really sad for like the environment, like and the land. It's terrible. But everyone's just kind of like, oh, you know, the symbolism.
Yeah. How long has it been like that?
It's been a couple months.
Shut the fuck up. I thought that just happened.
People are working on it. Like people are working on it, but like
How
it's,
long
I
does it
don't
take to
know.
clean shit out of a river?
I think I don't know. I think some. I think they stopped whatever was leaking to it from like some kind of sewage system. I
Lord.
don't know. I don't trust it. Nothing that happens in DC, because like there's so much like big, horrible politics news. Like the local stuff just is just like chatter, and it's just like the crazy things happen here all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you say it's, we were having a conversation earlier that like DC is not like scandal, but I feel like there's been scandals every week now. Is it not Kristi Noem's titty
DC is
husband?
scan no, DC is scandal right now, actually. It's like
Yeah.
worse. TMZ's here. Like
Yeah,
that's how
girl.
scandalous it is.
I mean, somebody was like, TMZ becoming the anti-hero of America is like something you can only write in like the seventh season of a TV show.
It's really funny. And they're like they keep shouting out like local places to eat, and people are clowning them. They're like, oh, there's this little spot in DC that has the best bagel, and everyone's just kind of like, shut up. I don't know. It's funny. It's funny seeing them come into DC. Especially because I remember, because I grew up in Southern California. LA was like a 30-minute drive from where I was. And TMZ is like the center of the universe there. Like feels like local news when like a celebrities, let's just say, going on a rampage in LA. It's kind of local news because it's like they could hurt you. I
Yeah.
don't
Yeah.
know.
I just like read a review of like a retrospective review of Britney Spears' Blackout, and it's all essentially framed around like the TMZ, like how that album was like a commentary on the burgeoning like business of celebrity scandals. So it's cool to see, or interesting to see, that TMZ is turning their evil eye onto DC.
Yeah, like finally, like there's someone's doing something, because like
Yeah.
the Washington Post is the Jeff Bezos Post now. It's like that was like the local paper of record, and it's like it also had like local news.
Oh,
So like,
really?
yeah, like because it was like a local paper. Now it's just like the Jeff Bezos Post, and it's just like a withering shell of its former self. And
Yeah.
democracy really died in darkness.
Yeah.
They really caught that one.
I mean, New York Times is now, no, not New York Times. CBS is now Barry Weiss Central. I don't know who the
Oh
fuck
yeah.
is up. I mean, New York Times has just always been a fucking demon, but
Yeah. Yeah, that's been their job, the demon of record.
Yeah, and now we used to be able to point it to Barry Wise, and now we can't do that, so I don't know who the fuck is in there anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need TMZ now more, not the hero we wanted, but the hero we deserved.
Yeah.
Which I think is good as any recession indicator when TMZ
Yeah.
themselves, can no longer profit off of celebrity news because I think the world is kind of tired of that cycle, that type of quote unquote journalism. And, because shit, we can't afford groceries and shit. So we got to talk to people responsible for not for that problem.
Yeah. It's funny too, because there's been a lot of local jokes, at least amongst like the gays, that a lot of Republicans are going to be outed, and because the twinks are going to be looking for a payout. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, somebody also, well, the T, I think it was TMZ themselves, or forgot what one of those gossip sites was like, TMZ, saw that, yeah, there's going to be a lot of outings in the next week, or at least one major one, like one major bombshell outing.
Maybe they have to like stagger them, so they're just like release
Yeah.
once a week, just like maybe it'll be like a segment.
This weekend, coming out of the closet, what's a funnier term? God, exposing homos this week. Yeah, so that is outrageous to see. But today, we are here, now that it's been 2 weeks of Coachella, we want to do kind of like a overview of the things that we saw. From a social cultural perspective, there's a lot of topics that came up, but one of the ones that I basically only saw you cover, Daniel Varanga, was to do with a historic band that represented El Salvador for the first time at Coachella. Do you want to give folks like a background of that?
Okay, yes. So Salvadorans this year have been really hyped up for Coachella more than usual because I think they're the first Salvadoran musical act on the Coachella stage. And they're called La Orquesta de los Hermanos Flores. And legendary group. I would say the most popular Salvadoran song like that you hear at parties that like people a tribute to like "This Is Our Song" is La Bala, which translates to the bullet for those who don't speak Spanish, and which is means we're not beating the violence allegations, so sorry. But La Bala is their most like important song, but like they have legendary songs that there's one called Salvadoreña, there's one called Enfermera, Mi País. These are all these like really nostalgic like songs that bring a lot of Salvadorans joy during gatherings. And they also have a front woman, Nori Flores, who's iconic. And I think for their musical output and for like the joy that they've contributed to Salvadorans, and I don't take joy lightly in the like capitalist joy sense, but for better or worse, this was like the soundtrack for a lot of folks during some really tough times. Salvador had a war and the whole gang stuff and the mass migration, and it hasn't been like an easy ride. And so I give them the flowers for their contributions to like art, and I feel like that goes without saying. A lot of Salvadorans are going crazy about this, feeling represented, and like, well, I think I don't know if you can if you agree, but like, was it like Los Tigres del Norte or someone came there like 1 year during Coachella, and it was like a big deal. It kind of like was like that. Like, I don't know if it was like that for us. And I don't know if there's been any similar, like, they're probably the most famous musical act, the Salvadoran, that all probably Salvadorans know in the diaspora. And it's cumbia. It's cumbia. I don't even know why I didn't say that first. It's cumbia. Salvadorans really cling to cumbia. It's like it's closer to a Colombian style versus, like a Mexican style. And people love their cumbia. It's like considered our traditional music. El Salvador, tiny country, we take bits and pieces, and nation states are fake. But they they did something at Coachella that just kind of went under everybody's radar or above everyone's head because nobody really is thinking about El Salvador, even though we had this whole thing with the kidnapped immigrants from Venezuela sent there and the torture center and crazy stuff. I guess it hasn't really sinked in that El Salvador is a dictatorship for a lot of people. And they basically went on stage and did Bukele government propaganda. Bukele, there's tens of thousands of Salvadorans in jail right now who've never gone to trial. 500 have died in the prisons at least. And it's a major humanitarian situation. And it's, people have been arguing with me about this, like how dare you try to bring them down because Bukele is doing great things and we went through violence back in the day, and it's just kind of like, okay, I don't care. Like, think people are like people are dying, Kim. And so, I hate to say the unpopular thing, but I'm just used to it now. And this is what they said. Like, this is a translation that Nory Flores, the singer of Los Hermanos Flores, said on the Coachella stage. I want to say something to the Salvadorans and Latin Americans. Visit us in El Salvador. We are at peace. The country is beautiful and we are waiting for you there. Thank God peace has arrived in El Salvador. And I was like, peace has arrived in El Salvador? Like, I get it. The crime is down. The incarcerations are up. I get that a lot of people do feel relief from gang violence. That being said, 517 people have died without trial in there. Prisons or concentration camps, whatever you want to call them. And there are tens of thousands of people in the system. And in this week alone, this last week, El Salvador released a new law to penalize minors as young as 12 with life imprisonment. Which, going back to our war, 12 was the year that you would get recruited to war as a child soldier in the 80s. So, like, we were going back so far, and nobody seems to see this. Salvadorans are just drunk on nostalgia. They want to be represented so bad that they're willing to overlook these crimes against their own people, and they're willing to use their like generational war trauma to be like, well, we've had it hard, and their gang trauma to have it hard. We had it hard. So, who cares if people throw the book at these innocent people? So yeah, I don't know. It's really depressing. And I'm just like so sick of having to repeat myself. I talk about this all the time if you follow me, and I've talked about it on this podcast quite a few times. And it's crazy to me. You know how we were talking about media going under. We still have PBS. We still have PBS. We have TMZ and PBS, the only two choices now. And PBS released a Frontline special like 2 weeks ago about Bukele's ties to not only Trump, but to gangs in his country and how he paid off the gangs and how like, he has illicit ties to them and stuff that like their journalists have been saying for years. And, it's like, it's past the point of like, I told you so. It's just like, oh my God, people are listening. Like a mainstream publication like PBS is doing content on this, and still people are just kind of like, okay, I just want to celebrate El Salvador. And some people have been alleging that this has been maybe a much more like thought out plan for Bukele propaganda because he is the most popular Salvadoran and he has a strong propaganda network. Was the Hermanos do what are the Hermanos Flores' ties to the Bukele administration? Like, why did we all of a sudden, for the first time ever during this presidency, get a Coachella act? Like, it's very suspicious, but I don't have any proof of that, so.
I mean, that's something that I was gonna try to connect to is that like right now, like international travel is down majorly and visas are not getting approved like for even some popular acts. Like FKA Twigs had to p p postpone like a tour for like a year because her visa wasn't getting approved. Like there is it's not easy to travel here right now. And for a country that was just demonized like not too long ago by Trump himself until like the Bukele partnership or whatever, it is a bit suspect. And so I wonder if they had a choice, right? Like, is part of the deal here for them to come here was to be like, you are, what is that word? Culture, you are like an envoy for our culture, right? You're like a representative for the current state of El Salvador. So this is part of the deal for getting to do this big show, which they got the second biggest stage at Coachella. And it wasn't like the opening three, like it was the second act of the day or third act of the day. So like even like bigger acts like were burgeoning acts like Slater got like a opening of the gates type of situation, which is bad. It's bad to
Yeah.
perform when the gates open, just to let people know who haven't been. It's like it's not like you want the higher up in the bill, like the later in time is what you want.
Yeah, I mean, all of the, like every time, everything I've seen, it's like been from the daytime. So like I kind of figured it was something like that. I don't know. It's one of those things where like, okay, like, oh, we got the little pupusa crumbs, like, thank you, powers that be. I mean, I'm happy for people. Like, I actually know people who went to the performance, and I haven't talked to them yet. I'm not gonna, they know where I stand, like whatever. I actually helped them get in indirectly, but I've never been to Coachella myself, but apparently I know people. And so I know some Salvadorans snuck in there, and if they're gonna do it, at least do it for free. And so I know some people who went, and
Blow up their spot.
I heard that there was a lot of joy there. A lot of people felt, together and, in community, I guess. And, this is no way into this Los Hermanos Flores, because like I said, like they had a significant contribution to Salvadoran culture, and I think they deserve their flowers. But, I don't know. I was like, I have to say the thing, and people have more smoke for me pointing this out than they actually do for like actual fascists, and people who support fascists.
What do you think is the hesitation with people hearing this?
I mean, Bukele's propaganda is still really strong, and a lot of people do not care that you had to crack a few eggs and sacrifice people for this broader safety that they perceive, not realizing that, they could be next at any moment, or someone they love, but or not their problem because they're no longer there. The problem with diaspora, those mangoes are rotten. And so yeah, I think, people have low identity self-esteem. Like people, like Salvadoran people, like they didn't know, used to get like called in the the song
And the
Oye Mi
chance,
Canto?
like
Yeah,
the,
Oye Mi Canto? There's no El Salvador then. You didn't have to shout out El Salvador in the 2000s. You could totally just ignore them. So like we used to not be in the country shout outs in the popular songs, and now we're like in all of them, which I've noticed in the last couple of years. Like every major artist has done that recently, and like from Bad Bunny to others.
Shakira.
Yeah, like El Salvador always makes it into these shout outs. But what I'm trying to say is that, just a shout out, we go crazy. There's even a memes about it. I think on The Simpsons, like someone said El Salvador, like they said something like bad about like our water system, or like something about haha third world country, and like someone po like a guerrillero popped out and be like, hey, El Salvador mention. And that's how Salvadorans kind of are. Like there was one time someone unearthed, and I remember watching this in real time, but Girlfriends, the last season before it got canceled. Girlfriends got canceled, the writer's strike. Anyways, there's an episode where like Joan, played by oh, what's her name? Tracee Ellis Ross. She goes and eats a pupusa. And she's eating this pupusa, and she says pupusa like five times. She's like, I love pupusas. And someone unearthed this clip a couple years ago and put it on the internet, and everyone's like, oh my God, I feel so seen. I feel so seen by girlfriends. Like, who would have thought? And people were like writing like diatribes about it, and like, okay, I'm glad people got their
what
life out.
the scene in Girlfriends means about the Salvadoran diaspora.
Yeah, it was like, okay, you're doing too much. Like, and I remember watching it in real time, being impressed, be like, oh, that's cool. And then that was it. And I probably, like, I don't know, I might have even forgotten about it. But, that last season, Girlfriends is shaky because of the writer's strike. So, like, bad memories. I don't like to revisit those. And, anyways, people like Salvadorans are just like this about a lot of things. And Nayib Bukele is someone who's our first basically celebrity. And it makes people feel some kind of way. And it's really like sad, and nostalgia is a part of it. I'm trying not to be so judgmental about it, because I'm just like, I just want people to open their eyes, and because I've tried shaming them and that doesn't work. And I don't know. I don't
What do
know.
you think is like, so we get this band, right? Historic band performs at one of the biggest stages in the world. How do they approach cultural pride from there, though? Like, what would have worked better? Because I don't think that, bad talking the regime was gonna ever be on the table, right? So,
I mean, they're not the Strokes. They can't just
well, they
say what's
had to go
on
home at some point, right? So, I don't
their
think they would have realistically.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of them might be in the diaspora. But yeah, I mean, it's like you can't even talk about it. So it's like, can we at least as Salvadorans talk about it? And like, the reason that's why I felt so compelled to like crawl out of like my shell and be like, I don't want to touch the subject anymore. Okay, no one's saying the thing. Okay, let me say the thing. Because there was just so much just like talk about this, and it's just kind of like, okay, can we just acknowledge what the fuck that was? I'm not even asking you to condemn it. Can you just like, can we think about it for a second? And a lot of people just aren't there yet. Aren't reflective. And but yeah, like
How,
oh.
yeah, so at this point, we're like in a consider the media you're consuming phase, right?
I mean, yeah, I don't expect like from Coachella and pop stars and but I don't really expect them not to like sell out or do the thing. But yeah, it's just like
Who are
yeah
you were saying?
yeah no I'm just kind of thinking here, like yeah, I mean, yeah, why now? I think I wish people just thought about that more, like of the why now, and why, like you said, we've been demonized. Like Salvadorans, had the whole MS-13 sort of like gang sort of stigma, bad hombres, all that stuff up until like really recently, and it's like it still feels like President Trump will throw Nayib Bukele under the bus at any moment, because he throws anyone under the bus at any moment. And I don't think he respects Nayib Bukele or anything, but yeah, like El Salvador has its own mega cult, and it's a Bukele cult. And they employ, like, they probably use the same bot farms and the same consultants. I mean, I know they do. And DC here, but yeah, it's just I don't know. I hope more Salvadorans kind of like wake up from this haze, and yeah, I hope they get their life at Coachella and then come to.
If it wasn't, if the, mass arrests of people haven't woken people up to this regime, what do you think would?
Oh, you know what's I hate to say this about Salvadorans, and it's just like It'll only matter when like other people think care, like other international, audiences and other, once Bukele starts making people look bad, because he's all about making El Salvador look good through illusion. Like, he will, these are propaganda videos when you see like the gangsters like all lined up, that is not your average citizen he's arresting. Those are people carefully curated and selected. And I just would hope that, people would just, kind of just see through that at some point. But the tide is starting to turn. Like, you're seeing a lot of like the global community kind of like, presented with the facts. Other people, countries have been calling out Bukele and stuff like that. And people even think that, if, let's say, Trump regime falls and he doesn't have any allies here anymore, they could maybe potentially take him and his regime to humanitarian court and do some kind of thing, which they don't always do for countries like El Salvador. But I mean, we had a whole civil war, we got no justice. So, and so once the public opinion turns, and then, people are like, oh, he was committing atrocities, once like you can't hide it anymore, people are like, it's like what people are doing now, who like people who were like MAGA grifters are like, you're starting to see them backpedal a little bit and distance themselves, because the money's not paying them anymore. And Bukele employs a big ecosystem of bots, of propaganda, of influencers, and paid through by crypto. I mean, we were the first country with crypto. Once that starts to dry up for whatever reason, and things can't be in growth forever, and like, he's stealing people's pensions, he's stealing from people's health care. People don't seem to care about these things. They only care about the crime thing. Everything else is turning to shit. Salvadoran kids, like, there was a meme recently that that Nayib Bukele banned the Edgar cut, and there's been all this discourse about it, that I don't even want to get into.
Oh
But
my
he
God.
it got people thinking that Nayib Bukele is like a fascist. Like, you have to have like a military cut to go to school,
Shut the
and
fuck up.
it's anti-Indigenous, it's anti-Black, and there are all of these elements to him that are like Nazi-esque, and that also mirror El Salvador's history with fascism and ethnic cleansing and genocide and civil wars, and so dictatorships. And so El Salvador is slowly going down this really dark path, and it's just kind of like all the people who claim to have any reverence for them, the 1980s, and what people went through, should be kind of reflecting about these things coming back into the fold. Because, despite El Salvador's big problems, there was at least democracy. You could at least dissent from the government. Like, I know a lot of journalists who are exiled right now. They're in countries like Mexico or the US or like Europe and Costa Rica. Like, there's been this big brain drain of people who could have maybe resisted the dictatorship a little better if, they kept their mouth shut. But like, it's sad to see. It's sad to see. And I don't know, it's one of those things where I feel like it maybe has to get worse for it to get better, or it's one of those things where like people in the global north and the US, do something about these far right governments, because, El Salvador sometimes also just feels like a downstream effect of whatever happened here. Nayib Bukele came in during the first Trump administration, during that sort of like push, and he aligned themselves, and who knows? Who knows what like a regime change here would mean to El Salvador? But what's going on with what happened with Venezuela, what's happened with Cuba right now? Like, you're not seeing that kind of approach to El Salvador from this country. It's like,
Yeah, I
it's just
think.
interesting. It's just interesting how like El Salvador was for a long time like, I don't know. It's never been this close as an ally to the US in this way, in
Yeah.
this prominent way, like being a prison for.
Yeah, I think that is what changed the relationship, is like letting them host the prison for the detention center folks. And I don't think that they were ever, I think Venezuela and Cuba were seen as like things we have to control because, you know, they were anti, their form of government was antagonistic to the capitalist US. And it seems El Salvador is not, was not following in that direction in the last, you know, decade at least.
No, if anything, El Salvador is like fascism's like the far right's like North Star right now. Like people in Argentina and other, I don't know, like there's been a lot of
I
changes.
mean, Chile has been fucking fighting for their life for the last fucking 20 years or whatever.
People compared Nayib Bukele to Fujimori in Peru, in terms of like how he's like terrorizing his population and his sort of populism. But yeah, it's never a good comparison. And at some point the world is gonna wake up and be like, oh, he was one of the biggest, he committed some of the biggest atrocities we never heard of yet. Or he aided in the biggest atrocities of the US and Israel, because he's also really aligned to Israel, which is interesting to me because I know a lot of people who are progressive who, understand, why Israeli occupation is bad and understands things like that. Just turns a blind eye to El Salvador. And I don't know if it's because they feel they don't know all the facts or what, or the information's not making it out. I don't know. I don't know. It's just an interesting disconnect for me, I think.
Yeah.
And it's something that I feel like, El Salvador has been always very like, divisive politically just because of the Cold War. So it's interesting where we're at now, where Nayib Bukele kind of came in as a centrist. And brought on fascism, and it's just like
Yeah.
it tells you everything about these times right now.
Because centrism is never going to lead to progress. Right, like at best it stagnates things, just like that's just the role of centrism, and at worst it leads to fascism, because centrists can ultimately be bought is like the big thing.
Oh yeah, and Bukele was bought.
You said something but it's skipping my mind what I was gonna ask. But as we look to everything, to other things that happened at Coachella, I'm also reminded of like how Mexicans are also, it's odd how like, you know, well, for those who don't know, Karol G was like the headliner of the final day of Coachella. Karol G being a Colombian singer. Brought in Becky G and an all-female mariachi band known as Mariachi Reina de Los Angeles to perform with her on stage. And, you know, seeing mariachi at the Coachella stage was a big point of pride for a lot of Mexicans, especially when, like, you know, Becky G came on the stage and she said, you know, love to immigrants, you know, and something to the effect of like, you know, fuck people who don't like immigrants or something like that. And they were like big moment of activism, especially after Karol G was interviewed for Playboy just a few weeks ago before the Coachella stage, and she mentioned that, you know, her team warned her not to make any political statements during Coachella because her visa would be revoked and she was trying to tour America and just like access, you know, America for work. And so she entered this, you know, one of the biggest stages in the world and didn't make any sort of political statement, but people saw the, you know, the platforming of this mariachi group and then of this Mexican American singer, Becky G, as like a big breakthrough moment. And they saw, you know, Becky G's words as this moment of activism. And it was everywhere, like, oh, Becky G took the hit for Karol G because she's Mexican America and she doesn't have a visa that would like be at risk. Meanwhile, Becky G made like the most like milquetoast like statement about just like loving Mexicans or whatever. But something that came out, came to light just a little bit after the performance was that the mariachi that Karol G brought on stage, Mariachi Reina de Los Angeles,
MAGA.
their owners are super MAGA, like not even just like regular MAGA. They are like really big, like Republican conservative supporters, right? So, Crystal Hernandez and particularly her father Jose Fernandez, who is like the owner of like the Greater Mariachi and other they're part of like conglomerate of different acts. But Jose Hernandez, his wife, so the mom of this group, she's the president of the Conservative Lincoln Club, which led the efforts to recall Governor Gavin Newsom's to recall him just recently. And she invites conservative leaders from like Florida, such as like Governor Ron DeSantis and Tucker Carlson, to like appear with the organization. And these same owners have pictures with like Kristi Noem and other right-wing leaders. So like Karol G in her,
She
don't
did
know,
no vetting.
zero vetting. So she goes on this magazine, talks about how, she wants to say something political, does something that is seemingly political by bringing in this mariachi, but ultimately it's like two steps back because you put more ma money in MAGA's pocket.
But
Like,
the
girl, and that's some shit that, like, this is not a moment for
okay.
symbolism. Like, this is the same shit with like Bad Bunny. Like, that's, I love him too. And not gonna say that his performance didn't bring me joy. But was it activism? No. Like, it didn't push the needle any way or form. Like, we are past like the moment for symbolism and just like joy that doesn't go anywhere. Like, joy as resistance is applicable to people who are under like the boot of like a violent regime. And as much as like Mexican Americans and immigrants are like experiencing that, Karol G and Bad Bunny are not the ones experiencing that. Like, the Raspado lady's joy is what is resistance, not fucking this explosion on TV. So I just can't, I just don't buy it. Like, I'm not, this is not no dig at like Karol G as a performer. I actually think the performance is excellent and made me dig into her discography, her last record more, and made me want to go see her. But was it activism? No, it was a good little show.
Yeah, and that's okay. It's funny because I'm glad you explained that because I didn't know what was going on. People were like, when I talked about, try to talk about Los Hermanos Flores and bring like attention to the Bukele regime, people in the comments were like, well, of course they performed because Karol G and the Mariachis did. And I'm like, what is the context of this? Why are people telling me this? Can I talk about El Salvador with y'all butting in? Like, okay.
Yeah, you were mentioning that they were like, oh, but what about like the mariachi? Like, talk about that, Daniel. And I'm like, bitch, there's like 30 other
Yeah,
influencers talking about that shit.
it was like how can you be surprised because the Karol G Mariachi thing happened? Like you shouldn't be. And it's just like I didn't even know that happened. Like that wasn't on my radar. Now I know, and I guess I don't know. I'll check out the performance, but I wasn't aware of it, and people just were like. I guess having this like Hispanic discourse that just did not include the Bukele administration stuff, I mean, it's fine. But El Salvador is just happy to be in the room.
And I think that's kind of like the short-sighted thing of it all is that, like, they care about issues that affect them immediately. And because another thing that I saw that was also super annoying is like, I saw like Latinx influencers like across the board being like, why aren't the brands paying Latinos to come to Coachella when like the main, one of the main acts is Latina? Like, why aren't the beauty brands bringing out Latinas? And I'm just, and they were bringing out, they were mentioning numbers like, records show that, the most beauty companies are supported by 30% Latinas or whatever. And I'm just
We're
like,
consumers, damn
yeah,
it.
like, making a capitalist plea for them. But on the other hand of that is that, like, you just highlighted the problem, girly. The problem is that, like, we're not like a real buying force in a lot of ways. Just like we're not a political bloc, like, not really. Because, like, we're gonna do it anyway. Like, it's the same shit about like how, Latinx audiences like keep going to the movies. Like, we are like consistent across all like demographics. Like, it would always be like some dramatic, I think like 25 to 30% of tickets from movies, Latinos will always buy that. And it's like, and so when you make this case for representation and like we are part of the population, it's like, okay, but you're still buying it. There's no need for these brands to accommodate you when you're already buying the thing.
Yeah, I don't know what people expect a lot from like the most evil music corporation. I mean, I'm jealous of everyone who's at Coachella, and I wish I could see performances there. So,
Oh, I'll take my, if girl, if they, if Coachella, you listening in, you want to send me, girl, hit me up. xoxorubenangel@gmail.com.
But it's like I was reading, we had a conversation last time I was on about Pearl Jam and Ticketmaster. And whatever on the Shakira episode, and I learned that Coachella was like a co-option
Oh,
of
yeah.
a festival that the Pearl Jam guy did to say that we don't need Ticketmaster, we don't need major labels, and in like they're like, oh, we can also lure people into the desert, and I remember how Coachella was super indie back in the
Yeah.
day. I was a radio DJ 2010, 2012. And I remember working in a really little hipster like environment in college. And I had to cover all these kids' radio shifts because they were going to Coachella. It was all these like, Mumford and Sons before Stomp Clap was, lame. There was all these like Mumford and Sons looking like white kids were going to like Indio. And I was like, why are you going to Indio, California? And then it was like, oh, there's a festival there. It's the festival. And then slowly and slowly it just, became what it is. But
Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, back in the day, it was like Beck and Bjork were headliners. But yeah, so Pearl Jam did start Coachella as like a protest of Ticketmaster. Because if you didn't know, like, Ticketmaster and Live Nation own a lot of venues across the US. And if you have to make a deal with them to be able to play at their venues. So if you're this giant act who needs, a 10,000 people capacity to play, you have to go through them. Otherwise, you're shit out of luck, right? And it's not only the big acts, it's smaller acts too who have to give like a huge cut of their revenue to Ticketmaster and Live Nation, even if it's a smaller venue. Just recently in the last, post a lockdown, there's been acts like Santi Gold who had to shut down their tours, and then in the UK it was Kate Nash who literally had to start a OnlyFans to be able to fund her tours. And she mentioned like how sometimes it's as big, like it's like 40 to 70% goes just to Ticketmaster or like the owner of that. So she's left with like these little crumbs that she has to pay out to the band and to merch and to every to dancers, to everybody involved in a production, which leaves her with like nothing, right? And so she was talking that like selling feet pics on OnlyFans has gotten her more funding for tours and more media attention than any of her music, despite winning like British equivalent of like a Grammy, right?
That's
And
wild.
having hits over there.
I saw something too that Lily Allen makes more selling feet pics on OnlyFans than she does for music. Lily Allen though doesn't need it because she comes for money, but I think she did it as like a social experiment, maybe. I don't know.
She talked about, she's talked a lot about how like it's just not viable, like a viable
No.
avenue for her, despite her
Yeah.
latest album being a big hit, apparently.
Yeah. Being a musician sucks right now. Terrible times, terrible times. I
Yeah,
don't
I
know what
would.
to say.
Yeah, so I was just like thinking about how, like, you know, these influencers keep asking these brands to like make a Latinx, like a concerted Latinx effort. And, you know, it's just the solution is to stop buying their shit. It's like a
Yeah.
unified, like, and to stop voting for certain shit. Like, it, you know, this is, I'm talking
Go
to,
make a zine. Get out of here.
girl, yeah, I'm talking to, I begin by talking about consumerism, but it leads to politics too. Because, like, you know, during the last three elections, there were, you know, these pundits have been trying to find the Latinx vote. And it's like there is no one unified thing, just like there isn't with consumerism. Because we see that also in like the success of like media that's put out there. One of the only like, you know, Latinx centric, you know, media properties that have succeeded, you know, in recent times has been on, in the streaming area specifically, was On My Block. And the minute those kids like asked for more money, that shit was cut. And before that, we had like, we only have like one property at a time. Before that, it was like Jane the Virgin. And before that, it was Ugly Betty. There's like never two competing things at once. Like,
It's a very like it feels very deliberate, like not to be conspiracy theorists, but it's just it's like by design that you know there can only be one successful. Like I always think about like Selena, for example. You know, people she was like kind of the litmus test for like how like a huge big Latino market can become viable, right? Business in the US. And you know, I didn't see a Mexican American prominently ever come up from that sort of, you know, we had Ricky Martin, we had J-Lo, you know, Shakira, and like, you know, talented people at things. And not, you know, dissing them, but I was just thought it was interesting, just like based on a numbers game. Like there is no like other Mexican American that was after Selena. Remember there was like this like parody account on Twitter called Anarchist Mommy, who like was like Selena was going to crush neoliberalism.
Girl, they were not a parody account.
They're not okay, they just trick people, but
Oh,
the
wait.
discourse, the
What?
mid-2010s discourse was insane. It was like Tumblr
Girl, I
discourse.
remember this one fucking account on Twitter. She had like a black and white picture. And she was like writing this big, like long thread about how like Selena was a fight against neoliberalism and she was gonna like
Yes,
fight
her.
NATO.
Yes.
No, she meant it with her chest.
That was Anarchist Mommy or something.
Was that her? Oh my
It was like
God.
a white girl pretending to be Latina.
And I
And
remember
then
she used to come for me all the time for not being leftist enough or whatever, or like putting a, trying to talk down. She would come for me for like talking down on Chicano men. I'm just like, bitch, girl.
yeah,
Yeah, and then it was,
that was a psyop.
oh, 100%. The era,
Twitter
girl.
psyop. I'm so pissed at myself that I didn't screen cap that Selena would have beaten neoliberalism
It's somewhere on the internet
threat
because that was such
because
a fucking historic
it was
Twitter
insane.
moment because the white people were eating it up too.
Yeah, it's very easy to just yeah
It was like up at the point,
deceive people.
yeah, it was at the right point of like post-Obama era, like need for like, you know, woke points that or like leftist point that people are just like fighting to grasp at anything. And so, yeah, or that person bringing up Selena as like a tool against NATO was wild.
I was like, where is this going?
But that's how people sound too, being like Karol G bringing the mariachi on stage. It's fighting ICE. I'm like, bitch, no, fighting ICE is fighting ICE. Like, we are not at the point of symbolism right now.
Carol G was gonna,
Girl,
she's gonna, she's gonna stop NATO or something. I don't
girl, I'm trying
know.
to. Oof. And yeah, as you're talking about like big Mexican American artists, I'm drawing a blank. Like, I think they try to make
There
it
is in the Spanish-speaking
cool.
world, but
Oh, in the Sp yes. In the Sp
I'm
but not
talking
in
about the Anglo
America.
market. I'm talking about the
Yeah.
Anglo market.
There is no.
I just thought, like, because like there's no Salvador Impostor, and I'm like, well, that's a numbers game. Like,
Yeah.
okay, like that's a numbers game. I don't feel too bad. And there are Salvadoran pop musicians, but I'm like, why isn't there more Mexican American pop stars? It's like as a it's a numbers game. It's like
Paulina and Thalia tried, but
Thalia.
there's no
Thalia doesn't.
Mexican.
Yeah,
I mean,
Thalia doesn't
Becky G
count.
tried too, but it took her like a fucking 10 years to
Yeah,
like
Becky G is
really.
like the closest thing, but that's like 2 decades after.
And like technically, she has a huge following, but like, I don't think anybody outside of like Latinos really care about Becky G. Like,
Yeah.
I don't think like
They care about the other Selena. They care about Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez is. Dmitri Lovato is also Mexican
That's
American.
true. That's so true.
Okay, maybe we're just
Okay.
being anti-whites again.
Oh.
Those two girlies. What the fuck is Jenna Ortega? What is Rachel Segler?
I don't know any of these people.
Jenna Ortega is Wednesday Addams.
Oh, I know Wednesday.
But she, I mean, she's not a pop star, but.
But yeah,
But you're right. Like, no, we don't have another Selena moment.
yeah.
Oh, she's part of.
All Salvadorans have has been Nayib Bukele. He's like our Madonna.
I mean, y'all have Julio,
Oh, that's true. We
but he's not a
do.
pop star.
He can be though. He should try.
Oh yeah, Julio Torres. Yeah,
He could
Jenna
try.
Ortega is 75% Mexican and 25% Puerto Rican.
Did you pop up the ancestry?
Yeah, I got her 23andMe results right here.
Why are there percentages?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, and it comes down to like we still buy other shit. Like, I don't know. I mean, I was a J-Lo fan down, you know.
You were like a J-Lo fan to a fault.
Yeah, 100%.
You
100%.
were shilling for that
Girl,
woman.
I saw her in Vegas and that show was incredible. And I would see her again if I could afford it. But and I think that was like my like grasping at straws of representation when I was a kid. Like, I don't even think my ass like registered her saying the N-word on the I'm Real remix
Technically, it
as
wasn't
a
her
kid.
voice, apparently. I don't know,
Oh yeah, it was Ashanti.
but
Allegedly,
still,
don't sue me. J-Lo's team.
J-Lo.
We had the
Please don't
Latino.
sue us.
Yeah. But yeah, like that didn't even register to me like as a kid.
Mean, yeah, yeah, so yeah, just observations,
So
but.
I mean, I guess we were part of that problem when we were youth.
I mean, I think Southern California Latinas really felt Gwen Stefani in that
Oh
one video
girl,
was
bitch,
representation.
come for me. I'm
You
a
couldn't
Southern
tell
California
girl.
Latina. That was my, yeah.
You couldn't tell girls from Santana or Anaheim that they should be mad at Gwen Stefani.
Girl, you couldn't tell people from East LA shit either. We fucking claimed that woman for a very long time. Up until probably her little MAGA turn, I think we were still in the trenches.
Yeah. I think it's funny too because people like all of a sudden were like, Gwen Stefani is bad. I'm like, she's been showing herself this whole time.
Yeah, Gwen Stefani did that.
But
But yeah, as we, so you never, as we wrap it up, you know, I, we know, not, I feel like people are trying to find their joy Like, shit, I would go to Coachella too if I had the chance. Like, I've been before. It's an incredible experience, but that doesn't mean we don't get to talk our shit too. Like, it's never about like turning off the brain entirely to the entertainment we're consuming, right? Like, it's seeing where the cracks are showing and what those like slips say about like the moment, right? So I think even if we know we don't have a solution for these things, like I don't think there was a moment where you re realistically expected like Los Hermanos Flores to get on stage and be like, fuck Bukele. But it's like, okay, so that wasn't gonna happen. So what is them like being like, visit El Salvador, what does that say about?
And they could have just stopped at Visit El Salvador and have like some plausible deniability that that's propaganda because it's just a simple saying. But they were like, we're at peace, and they emphasize it. And it's just kind of like, okay, like you were maybe told to say this. This is the statement.
Yeah, we're at peace at someone else's expense, right? Like
Yeah, it's like
tens
we're
of
at
thousands of
peace.
people.
12-year-olds will get the death penalty. We're at peace. Thanks.
And that's kind of like, now that you repeated that, like that reminds me that, you know, Israel just passed their law where they can like hang Palestinians after like 4 months of like detention recently or something short. It was like they can be, and that's a law that only applies to Palestinian folks in Israel, like after being detained by them. And so
Terrible.
it's like the same like execution systems to portray this like image of control when in reality it's just like fascism.
And you know what's funny? Like, because it all builds on each other, like Nayib Bukele has ties to Israel, and I've talked about this before in my work, and they all kind of share ideas and collaborate. And with Bukele, it's interesting too, because he follows these playbooks from Israel. He follows these playbooks from the US. And his fascism has been like 2 or 3 years ahead of like the United States is, because we had that, like, not to say that everything was not messed up during Biden, because they were, but Nayib Bukele kind of bit was biding his time during the Biden administration. And God, where was I going with this? Kind of Donald Trump. Oh yeah, like there are things that happened already in El Salvador that the United States is now doing, and it's been like 2 years ahead. So like a given example, like the state of exception, taking over cities, like militarizing the country, this kidnapping people, except in El Salvador, they're kidnapping domestic people to throw into jails. They're not. There's no like immigrant population they're terrorizing, but. There was this article that came out recently that like that Trump administration has been spying on journalists, and
Yes.
there was like spyware, which, and the spyware is Israeli spyware. I was reporting on this in like 2021, 2022, El Salvador, because Israeli spyware was already fucking up some journalists' lives in El Salvador and was already being reported on, and like it was already happening. And it's almost like this, like El Salvador's been like this little dress rehearsal. So it's just like, oh, okay, we're at the kidnapping stage, we're at the Israeli journalist spyware stage, and there is no check and balances in El Salvador too. So like, or there isn't in the US now. So like, it's funny watching one of my countries go down the shitter and the other one go down the shitter, and they're like making out in the shit water of the Potomac.
There's a bunch of things that, sorry, I was trying to close, but you just like kind of opened the floodgates a little bit.
Sorry. Yeah, maybe we should close.
I'm gonna begin big and then go small. Like, yeah, like shit that is like happening, like, you know, incarcerating people without like, you know, due process and just like labeling people like terrorists or like enemy of the state or whatever in order to imprison them. Like, that's coming home to roost soon, girl. Like, it's already happening to folks who were like documenting ICE recently. There was two Latino reporters, one of them actually conservative, in the last year that were, or earlier this year, that were detained.
The leopards are eating lots of faces.
Yeah, but you know, one of them was not, you know, conservative, but one of them was. He was like, I forgot what nationality he was from, but he's like in ICE custody still. But he thought because he was like reporting kindly on the Trump administration that they were not going to eat his face. But here we are, and like things are only going to get worse as technology. Like now, you not YouTube, Google and Apple are like vying to make like ID recognition, like face recognition, like a central part of their devices. So like supposedly in the cons in a concern for childhood safety, but like
Where have I
why
heard this?
these companies that we already know constantly leak our shit, why do they need even more like biometrics from us and like government like information from us? That is crazy. But it's global, and I'm also like that also ties into like how FIFA is preparing to like stop players from coming to the US that have been critical of the US. And in a university recently, a student was arrested for making anti-Israeli jokes on WhatsApp. Right? Like, so this shit's already, they're already spying on us, girl. They're already gonna lock us all up. But I'm also reminded that in like there was a US Kuwaiti journalist detained in
Oh my
Kuwait
God.
recently.
Yeah, he's my old coworker.
Did you wanna
Ahmed
just
Shihab El Din, Ahmed, he has been imprisoned in Kuwait. Well, it was supposed to be a short trip. He's been in prison 50 days because he shared some footage of the Iran war and he just shared images. I know him. I worked with him in Al Jazeera, AJ Plus. He was a Palestinian. He's of Palestinian descent. And I just remember he gave me so much encouragement when my Palestinian Salvadorans piece came out. And, he's such a pro. Like, he's been on so many networks, and lucky I got to, cross paths with him a little bit. But yeah, he's a truth teller, and he's been talking about this, like, Israel, Gaza, the genocide happening in Palestine, and he's been talking about it for years, even before everything went down with October 7th. And he's, he was, supposed to visit. He's visiting his family because I think he's also Kuwaiti, and he's been in prison. And so the different journalist organizations are trying to get him free. They're sharing a petition. His name is Ahmed Shihab El Din, and he sometimes goes by ASE on some social media platforms. But yeah, he we're just hoping for his freedom and trying to put pressure on the Kuwaiti government because it's. And it's wild, yeah, because I know Salvadoran journalists that have been, imprisoned or been threatened to. But this is someone like I worked with in the San Francisco and DC offices of Al Jazeera, and it's just like, whoa, like I've never been this close to someone who's been detained for just sharing social media posts about that were informative. And so, yeah, it's really shady what has gone on, and yeah, he shouldn't be detained.
Do you know if there's like a petition or anything going around that folks
Yes,
can?
there is a petition for the Committee to Protect Journalists.
And we will link that in the episode description for folks to engage.
Yeah, cpj.org, and they have all kinds of info on him. He's the top.
All right. It's like seems like a rough cut to. You know, what's made you less bitter as of late?
What has made me less bitter? It is springtime in DC. We had such a brutal winter. So I've just been going out, seeing more live music, going to nightlife and stuff like that, and not slipping and falling on the ice. So just the weather change has been great for me. Just I'm from California. This is DC is not my habitat. So Yeah, that's the weather, getting vitamin D.
Who'd you see recently?
Oh man, I saw this really obscure 80s post-punk band called the Chameleons.
Oh.
Basically Interpol like reheated their nachos 20 years later.
Damn.
And then their opener was this band called The Velt, which is a black-led shoegaze band from North Carolina that they've been around since the 80s. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I
But
don't know them
there's
at all.
yeah, I didn't know who they were until I went to go see them. I was like, oh crap, and I looked them up. But yeah, we have a couple venues here where tiny acts don't have to go through Ticketmaster. We saw them at the Black Cat. If you're ever in DC, try to get a go see a show at the Black Cat. It's a legendary venue.
All right. Trying to think of what made me less bitter. My team won the league championships. And so now we're off to
Congrats.
play all the other league champions in the West Coast this coming weekend in
Congrats.
Vegas.
What's your team's name?
The Portland Rugby Club, technically the Portland Pigs. Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah, that's our mascot. Yeah, this is our second year winning the Division III league. So
Congrats.
hopefully we take the West Coast. And if we win, we go to Chicago for the national championship, which is
Oh,
wild
wow.
because that is not any fucking contact sport was not in my bingo card for myself. And here
If
I
you would
am.
have told me when I knew you like I don't know 10 years ago, I don't know how long it's been,
Yeah, 10 years ago.
that you'd be like this big into rugby and like winning, I wouldn't have guessed it.
Me either. But she's been going through her Regina George ending credit life right now. Yeah, she went to therapy and decided to put her anger into sports.
Love that.
Yeah. All right, Daniel, thank you for
Yeah.
joining us. Where can the people find you?
Yeah, at PP on Spice, wherever you get your social media.
Yeah, wherever fine social media is available. All right, y'all. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye.
Before we head out, I want to give a huge shout out to all of my I Know Her level patrons. That would be Fernando Peña, Selena Portera, Miranda Elias, Magdalena Saucedo, Ronnie Leyva, and Bianca Garcia. You're our real ones, and I definitely know you, girl. If you also want to be somebody that I know, feel free to support this podcast over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams. The link is in the description.